I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Bullshit, I can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
If you ladies leave my island, if you survive recruit training, you will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death praying for war. But until that day, you are pukes. You are the lowest form of life on Earth. You are not even human fucking beings. You are nothing but unorganized, grabastic pieces of amphibian shit. Because I am hard, you will not like me. But the more you hate me, the more you will learn. I am hard, but I am fair. There is no racial bigotry here. I do not look down on niggers, kikes, wops, or greasers. Here you are all equally worthless. And my orders are to weed out all non-hackers who do not pack the gear to serve in my beloved call. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Bullshit, I can't hear you.
Sir, yes, sir.
What's your name, scumbag?
Sir, Private Brown, sir.
Bullshit, from now on you're Private Snowball. Do you like that name?
Sir, yes, sir.
Well, there's one thing that you won't like, Private Snowball. They don't serve fried chicken and watermelon on a daily basis in my mess hall.
Sir, yes, sir.
And you, John Wayne, is this me?
Who said that? Who the fuck said that? Who's the slimy little communist shit twinkle toe cocksucker down here who just signed his own death warrant? Nobody, huh? The very fucking godmother said it. I'm fucking standing. I will PT you all until you fucking die. I'll PT you until your assholes are sucking buttermilk. Was it you, you scroungy little fuck, huh?
Sir, no, sir.
You little piece of shit, you look like a fucking worm. I'm gonna warp you.
Sir, no, sir.
Sir, I said it, sir.
Well, no shit. What have we got here? A fucking comedian, Private Joker. I admire your honesty. Hell, I like you. You can come over to my house and fuck my sister. You little scumbag. I got your name. I got your ass. You will not laugh. You will not cry. You will learn by the numbers. I will teach you. Now get up. Get on your feet.
Hi. This is Prosium of the Abbey Crew. And tonight I just got my first, I just got my WOG haircut. It's a lot easier than I thought it would be, actually. I was the only one there that actually volunteered for it, so it's kind of a funny story. But had a lot of good conversation. I really don't know what to say. It's just that I feel more, I don't know. Okay, it's weird. I never really thought much that a haircut could allow somebody to feel a certain way. You know? I've never really been a shallow person. I've never really been concerned about my looks or anyone else's looks for that matter. It's just, when I walk down the street after having the haircut, I kind of felt like there was more confidence within me, more power. All my life, that's really been something I've been lacking in. I was the gray man. I was a blip on the radar in high school. I knew I was never noticed. I was never really, never got into fights. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Past week has been a really strange week in my life, anyway. And, well, what I would like to know is, is there such thing as fate? Such thing as destiny? You know, I do believe in fate, and I do believe in destiny. I really don't know, nor do I even care if anybody else does. I don't even know if anybody else is going to be hearing this. Fate, I believe, is something that is going to happen in your life no matter what. Now, can I tell you if it was all preordained by some huge fucking god type creature or what, you know? I couldn't tell you for sure. Destiny, on the other hand, I think is something you have to jump into, something you have to risk. It's a very spontaneous event. It could take a millisecond, could take place over years, but that's how I see things. I've been single now for about 6 months. Split up with my last girlfriend just after I started getting involved in the WOG movement. She's a WOG, my ex. And then I was living by myself. I was working in some fucking dead-end security job. Like, yeah, we're all security guards. And then I got fired about a month and a half ago. It really is nobody to blame but myself, but there's still something there that it just seemed to me that it wasn't right. My getting fired wasn't fair. Maybe it wasn't. In fact, now I'm thinking, you know, I don't think it was fair at all. I was working a 12-hour shift, middle of the night, I was the only person there. 5 minutes before the end of shift, I fell asleep. I got caught. And yeah, I guess there is nobody to blame but myself, but at the same time, my first fuck-up, I got fired. Been working there 7 months, no fuck-ups until then, and I got fired. Last week, I was walking up to the bar, meet some buddies. It's kind of a weekly thing, you know, we go to the bar, we hang out, have a good time, have a few beers. I had some headphones in my ears, and I was walking up the street. And I was walking, and I passed these two girls at the bus stop, and I remember passing them. I don't remember seeing them much else after that, but I turned around, I took my headphones off just as I had reached the bar. And usually, I don't know why I did that. I usually keep them on until I'm inside. But when I took them off, I noticed two giggling voices behind me, and surely enough, I turn around, and yeah, there's those two girls that were at the bus stop. They followed me up there. One of them comes up and asks me for my number. 3 days later, we started going out. She's now a steady girlfriend. She, I don't know, maybe it's just a the honeymoon period. You know, when you start a relationship, you go through that honeymoon period. Yeah, I think I'm in that right now. But she makes me happy. But if it wasn't for that split second when I took off those headphones, I never would have noticed her. She never would have been able to get my number. And, you know, I'd still be in the same old rut. A few days ago, mainly due to her involvement, I faxed off some resumes. 3 hours later, I got a call back from one of the places. They wanted me to go to Vancouver, which is like a 2-hour drive from Abbotsford. I don't have a car, so I took the West Coast Express, which is like this train, an actual rail train that runs from Mission all the way up to Vancouver and back. And I went up there and I wore a suit and tie. I hate wearing suits and ties. I hate it. But you know what? I think that's what got me the job. I went to the interview and I got the best interview of my life. I wasn't nervous. I was all front, up front. I was there. I had groomed myself well. They called me back that night and said, "Hey, you're hired." And I said, "Great, when do I start?" They say, "Tuesday." That's, seeing as it's 1:36 a.m. early Monday morning right now, that's tomorrow. Tomorrow I start working a new job where I have all the benefits, the best pay I've ever gotten in the security industry, and I got a city girlfriend who I'm falling for pretty fast, actually. I'm scared of that, but I'm not at the same time, you know? But it all leads back to that one split second when I was going back into that bar. And I took the headphones off. But anyways, that's besides the point. Sean gave me this tape recorder. And he says, I want you to record yourself. I want you to talk to it. Say anything. Talk about all sorts of shit. Particularly, how I feel about the haircut. So yeah, I got the haircut. I was always... It's actually kind of a funny story. When on the way out there, I was thinking, you know, should I get it or shouldn't I? You know, I do need a haircut, but do I want that haircut? Or do I want this haircut? When I got there, it was just, you know what? Fuck it. Screw fate. Jump into this. Do it. So I did it. Now I'm a smoker, and it's kind of weird how it happened. I was walking around the block after the haircut, and I put the smoke in my mouth, and I reached into my pocket to grab my lighter and light it. My lighter was it's not broken. It was out of fluid. I couldn't light it. And I walked into the store and see if they have any matches. Right? They didn't have any matches. But the one thing I did notice is when I was talking to people, they treated me differently. From what I was used to. Like, I would say, hey, do you have any matches? And the girl behind the counter wouldn't look me in the eye at all. And she said, no, I'm sorry, we don't have any matches. But she would not look me in the eye, and that always struck me as strange, because I'm always used to people looking me in the eye. I'm a big guy. I am about 260 or so. You know, I'm about 6'3". I got a good set of muscles under the chub, but I've never really thought of myself as intimidating. A lot of people say I am, but I don't know. It's just something I don't buy. But when I can see it in their face, when I talk to people, just random people, I got the impression. Like, wow, wait a second. I'm getting something from this that I never got before. I mean, it was cool. But anyways, that's all I can say right now. I'm going out and I've got a lot of things to do tomorrow. I gotta go into Vancouver. I gotta get my, pick up my uniform for my new work. I'm taking the train back to Abbotsford again. I'm going to be walking down Robson Street for about 3 hours. Should be interesting. See what happens, see where it goes. See if the homeless people start freaking out at me about how they killed Bob Marley. And how Bush is going to get reelected. But anyways, that's besides the point. I'll add some more to this later. You know what I've always wondered? What's the difference between influence and manipulation? I think I got it figured out. It's the word. I mean, the only real difference between the two is just the word. Influence has a positive connotation, while manipulation usually has a negative one. But you know what? That realization led me to think. What is the difference between two people? It's not how they sound, it's how they look. We live in a shallow society. We're always in constant judgment of our neighbors. I think it's a defense mechanism. It's a way of telling whether or not someone is safe to be around. Look at it this way. Would you rather be talking to the guy dressed like a businessman or the transient that asks you for a buck? Chances are you'll pick the businessman. Well, the reason why is besides the open sores in the transient's face, you assume that the businessman will be well off, well adjusted, and an okay person. But think about it in this way. In reality, that businessman is most likely a pedophile who's got gigabytes of child porn sitting on his hard drive and spends his spare time looking at grade school children through a pair of binoculars. And that transient that asks you for a buck has a PhD in social science. I mean, it's not unheard of. In fact, it's very common. I used to know some homeless people, and they were always some of the smartest, nicest people I've ever met. Everyone has eccentricities. I do, you do, everyone does. You know what I do with my spare time? A big guy like me? I dance. Hell, I get off on dancing, and I happen to believe I'm fucking good at it. But it leads me back to the haircut, you know? The other day, I had fairly lengthy hair. I always wore it slick back and dressed in whatever was comfortable, usually a pair of wide-leg jeans and a skull t-shirt covered by a bomber jacket. People would yell at me from passing cars, usually on Friday nights. Fag, loser, fuck, I don't care. I didn't care. People are ignorant pieces of trash, usually. But the trick to changing your look is quite simple. By changing your look, you alter other people's perceptions of you. Now, this cut has severely altered not only other people's perception of me, but it's altered my perception of myself. But wait, how does that work? I'm a shy guy. I'm not very confident. I'm very quiet. So, what's different? Just because of the fucking haircut? An hour in an antique dentist chair and my entire perception has changed? That's led me to realize something too. You know, it's not the cut. It's not. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like it. In fact, I think it's the king shit. But it doesn't mean one fucking thing. I had the confidence in me all along. I had it inside, but I was always so self-conscious about the way I looked that I never displayed that confidence. But now I do. So what's changed? Anyway, I'm going to end this one for now. I'll do some more later. It's now March 28th. It's been about 5 days since I recorded last. I really haven't had time with the new job and everything. I've noticed a lot of changes. A lot in my attitude while I'm at work, a lot in other things. I'm going to give you a bit of background here. I've been a security guard on and off for about 5 years now. My first job, I was at Eaton Centre Mall in Vancouver, which is like Metrotown. It's a really, really, really big mall. And I was a night guard. I covered the office towers. So I never really dealt much with customers. After that, I did a variety of things. I did the Mission Junction Mall, which is actually quite large, especially for one person to cover without a vehicle. It's, pretty big. Mostly parking lot, but, you know. And I was a night guard there, too. I did some other stuff here and there. Castle Fun Park, which is this little amusement park type thing. They got mini golf and video games and stuff like that. But even then, all I did was just walk around and keep an eye and make sure nobody was damaging anything. That's all I really had to do. This job's different, though. I have to stand for 8.5 hours a day, during the day, at a Staples. Which is, I don't know if you have Staples where you are, it's kind of like this home business depot type place. You can get computer stuff, you can get all sorts of shit. But anyway, my job is to stand for 8.5 hours a day and just keep an eye on people, make sure they're not shoplifting, make sure they're not panhandling, causing trouble. My first day there, I noticed a big change. First of all, I was more upfront. I was more confident, you know. I could still smile and nod at people. But a lot of people refused to look at me, you know. And it was always these people that I was more wary of, but not in the usual sense. It was just like, well, this person's not staring at me. This person's not looking at me. Why? And I started to think, you know, was it because they had something besides? No. I realized something a little later as I had put on my uniform and put my sunglasses on and looked in the mirror. And I said, oh, that's why they're not staring at me. I look like one scary motherfucker. It's kind of creepy, actually. I mean, I'm 6'3", about 250. And you know, even without the cut, and even without all this stuff, I'm a pretty intimidating person. But when I put that uniform on, and I have those sunglasses on, and I got my hair cut the way it is, they're like, oh my god, beware. Well, that's besides the point. Other thing I noticed, this is actually just yesterday, I've been working for the past 5 days, so this is yesterday, Saturday, when I was at work. Something completely just blew my mind how this worked. I've always thought of myself as a good judge of character, but this one guy came into the store, and he was well dressed. Like just to look at the guy, you'd think, oh, he's a businessman, you know, he's whatever, right? Ignore him. He's not causing any trouble. But something about him, just made me kind of raise an eyebrow and just like, maybe I should follow this guy just to make sure. It was a hunch. So I followed the guy around a bit. And at one point, he even came up and started to talk to me. And he says, so why does Staples need a security guard? And I shit you not, he was using that exact same voice. He sounded like a weasel. A weasel. So he keeps walking around, and I was just like, oh, well, yeah. Staples need security because, you know, every now and then we gotta muscle somebody out. Like who? Panhandlers, traveling salesmen, shoplifters, that kind of stuff. And the guy's like, okay then, really? And I swear to God, he's using that same voice. So we walked off, and I still kept an eye on him. A few minutes later, he walks up to one of the staff and tries to get him hooked up on a pyramid scheme. So yeah, my hunch was right. I've never had hunches like that. You know, just to look at somebody and just, well, hey, this guy's not right. I've never really had that. Then again, I've never really been open to the idea of having hunches either. But later on that day, I started, you know, that worked out really well. I'm going to see if I can have other hunches, other things going on. And so I did. I closed my eyes for a second, and I opened them, and something just told me to go to a certain area of the store. And just as I was going there, I mean, it was completely out of line of sight. I could not see this area of the store from the front door. But as soon as I walked over there, there's a guy in a black jacket shoving a day planner in it, trying to shoplift. Well, geez, I just got a shoplifter. How the fuck does that work? Like, seriously. I went up to him and I said, I said, put it back and get out. And he looked at me and he looked quite scared. So he did. Third time, it was the exact same area of the store. This time, it was an old lady wearing a blue jacket, an old woman, and she was a shoplifter too. I mean, I'm not against shoplifting from large multinational corporations. I mean, their insurance covers it anyways. But when I have to do my job, I want to do it well. Because you do it well, you get more money. You get more money, you get more opportunity. And it's that simple. I don't know. But it's all in the haircut, you know? It's all in the perception. It's all in other people's perception of me while I have this haircut. Now, I could have done it up in a mohawk, I could have spiked it, I could have done all sorts of shit. But this look is intimidating. It is. It makes people look at me and say, oh, maybe I shouldn't fuck with this guy. And, like, nobody really fucks with me anyway. I mean, I'm a big guy. I mean, the few times that I've ever been bothered were from people in passing cars. Actually, that happens more often than you'd think. People in passing cars and large groups of people. I have never had a single person or even two people start saying shit to me since I was maybe 13, 14. That's how it happened. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is this is totally unscripted. You know what I mean? Like, right now, I'm sitting here in my bedroom, laying down on my bed, with a mic in my hand. and I'm talking into it. You know? I got my DVD player playing MP3 CDs. I've got, in the living room, I got my computer playing MP3s, and it's a sunny day, it's Sunday, sunny as hell. I gotta, in a few hours, I gotta go back and hook Sean back up with his After Now recorder, which, you know, I'd be a dead man if I didn't, but yeah. I mean, it's that simple. I don't know. I'll record more in a bit. I'm gonna tell a little story about myself here. As you all know, I'm 23 years old. I'm a security guard, but I don't know. I just feel like I need to tell people why I am the way I am. I mean, not even to justify it, but just to get it out there. You know, everybody has a story, and I guess this is mine. And hey, I'd love to know other people's stories because, well, stories are cool. I wasn't the most popular kid in high school. As I said before, I'm just a blip on the radar screen. I was overweight, vastly, vastly overweight. I was 350 pounds when I was 16, which is really where my life started. Was at the age of 16. That's when I got my first girlfriend, and God, she was a catch and a half. Well, in looks anyways, for the rest of it, she was a bitch, but, no, she was, 5'6", blonde, slender, hot, and I was 350 pounds, and she came up to me, and she asked me out, and she was serious. She was having troubles at home. She ended up, moving in with me after, 2 weeks of us going out, which... It's a little soon. And at the end of the third month, she was pregnant. So yeah, I was a teen father. She cheated on me a bunch of times during the pregnancy. I'm still positive that the child is mine. I just look at her and I know. During the pregnancy, she cheated on me twice, I believe. Kind of ruined my next two relationships because, you know, I had trust issues. But anyways, I stayed with this girl for 4 years before it was just getting too much. She would cheat, she would lie, all sorts of stuff. 4 years later, and as much as it broke my heart, I said, I can't be with you anymore. And unfortunately, that also meant I couldn't really be with my daughter anymore, and that hurt a lot. So I left. I did the only thing I could do. I was living in Abbotsford at that time, and I needed somewhere else to go. I had nowhere. I couldn't live with my mom. I couldn't live with my dad. I couldn't live with any of my friends. So, when I was 19, I think it was 19, 20, 20 actually, 20, I was 19, I became a security guard, and I was working there for a while, and anyway, moving along, I was 20, and I needed to leave, I needed to get out of here, so I went over to Vancouver Island, a small town called Ladysmith. One of my old friends who had gotten in some trouble with the law over here, after his probation and everything was through, he moved over there with his grandmother, and he met a girl, and they got married. Actually, they just got married last year, but, they've been together for about 4 years now. I went over to visit for a week, and that 1 week was like the most liberating week of my life. It's the first time I ever got drunk, first time I ever got high, the first time I ever had a cigarette. You know, and maybe that's not such a good thing, but it was just so liberating for me to be able to do this stuff. You know? The freedom behind it was just, it was there. When came the day I left, and I turned around and I said, look, I can't be in Abbotsford anymore. I can't be with my girlfriend anymore. I can't do this, I can't do that. I would love to move over here. And they said to me, Kyle. Oh, shit, he's my real name. Ah, fuck it. My name's Kyle. They said to me, you can come back, and you can live here. And you don't even have to pay rent for the first couple of months. You just help us do some renovations, we'll call it square. And I turned around and I said, sweet. So a month later, I'm arriving at the ferry terminal with nothing but two suitcases with my entire life in them. I had a laptop, I had a few movies, a few books, a couple binders with notes and just stuff that I've written down over the years. I still have a lot of them. But then I went over there. And that's when I really kind of came out of my shell. I had more friends than I could count. I wasn't on the computer much anymore. But I had more friends than I could count. I was popular. Not only that, but I was the most intelligent person in my group of friends, which were well over 30 people. And I was the go-to guy. Everybody would come to me with their problems, and I'd sit there and I'd try to help them through it. You know what I find is really funny, though? Is you can give advice and help so many people out of their problems, and it will work. But you try to do it for yourself, and it's just like, nothing. Fuck all. But what do, right? Anyways, 2 years passed. I lost a fuck of a lot of weight. I lost about 150 pounds, actually. So I was from 350, I was down to about 200. I felt good. I could run again. I could laugh. I could take my shirt off at the beach. I tell you, that was liberating. And, you know, girlfriend after girlfriend after girlfriend after girlfriend. I mean, I was a Mac. I was the Mac Daddy Ladysmith. But then the drama kind of got to me. It got too much for me. I got too involved in a lot of the local issues with drug dealers and personal problems with one another and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of hard to stay neutral when you got your friends wanting you to choose sides. So I had enough. I couldn't take it anymore. My girlfriend at the time, I turned to her and I said, "Look, I can't take it here anymore. I want to leave." And she looked at me and she says, "Let's go." So we came to Abbotsford. Oh, fuck. Hold on a second. I'm back. Sorry about that. That was my ride into Langley tonight showing up to give this thing back to Sean. Where was I? Two suitcases full of stuff. Blah, blah, friends. Oh, yeah. Okay, so I came back to Abbotsford. Me and my girlfriend at the time. And we stayed with my mom for a month. That was a hell of a thing. And then I ended up getting a one-bedroom apartment, shared with my girlfriend until me and her broke up. And then unemployed. And then finally, it's funny. I discovered Rant Radio and all this stuff in March of last year, and I discovered it through Tales from the After Now. I've been into anime for like years and years and years. And a friend of mine used to do radio plays based around anime. And then he discovered Tales from the After Now, and he pointed me to it. He said, "Hey, you gotta check this out. This is some cool shit." So I checked it out, and then all of a sudden, boom, I'm hooked. And I was hooked. It was fucked up. It's like I heard the first episode, and I was just like, "Holy fuck, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard." And then from there I checked out the FTP, the Rant Radio FTP, and I started checking out some of the rants. And then I started checking out some of the shows. And then it became an obsession for quite a while. Like a serious obsession. I couldn't stop talking about it. Every stranger I'd meet on the street, I'd be like, "Hey, have you heard of Sean Kennedy? Have you heard of Rant Radio? Have you done this? Go check out this website. Go do it." And after a while, people really started to get pissed off at me because I wouldn't stop talking about it. But you know what? You know what really matters about it? The people I introduced it to thank me for it. You know, I don't want to do the whole ego thing, right? But the Abbey crew kind of started with me. I mean, I'm not taking full credit, you know what I mean? It was all of our influence in one way or another that made us what we are. You know? I discovered it. You know? Jibcat, he's our wheels. Briarios, he's our money man. Well, actually, Jibcat and Briarios are our money men. But still. And that's, you know, that was the birth of the Abbey Crew. I introduced them all to that, and I started to mellow out a bit, and I said, you know what, I could go on and on. I could be a little fucking Sean Kennedy fanboy for my whole life, or I could do what I need to do with my own life and just adopt a lot of the beliefs put forth, a lot of the feelings put forth. My whole life, I just wanted to be part of something, you know? I was an outcast. I was a freak. I was a blip on the radar screen. But now, I'm a part of something. I'm a log. And, you know, it still sounds corny to me to say that, but yeah, I'm a fucking log. You know? Just because I say I am, that I am. But, you know, it's like anything else. After I got into Sean, I stopped watching TV, and I started opening my eyes for myself, finding out things from my own, you know, two eyes, just looking around and seeing what I could see. And then after a while, I started to see things, patterns, if you will. Strange patterns with... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here. Yeah, so I saw these patterns, and, you know, the patterns are everywhere. They're in life, they're in society, everything. I started really getting into military stuff. I've never been much into military stuff. But now, I guess you could say I am. Well, because it's true, I am now. I'm into swords, I'm into weapons, I'm into all that kind of stuff. I wanna take some physical training. Like, I wanna be able to defend myself hand to hand if need be. But, you know, things will, oh, what the fuck am I listening to here? Hold on. Kids in America. Yeah, next. There we go. So, where was I? Okay, from this point, it was about August, around the end of the first 2 months or so of the Sean Kennedy TV show. I went out for my friend on Vancouver Island, Ladysmith, the guy that got married last year I told you about. I went out to his wedding, and the day before the wedding, I did a lot of thinking. And I turned to my girlfriend at the time and I said, you know, I'm not in love with you anymore. I don't feel this is going the way that I should feel, you know. I call me a hopeless romantic if you will, but I believe that, you know, love is one of the most important things we have. I mean, look at it this way, it's free. Love is free. Monetarily, anyway. There are sacrifices that need to be made for love to work, but for the most part, it's free. So we broke up the day before the wedding. I was the best man. She was a friend. I felt like shit about that for a few weeks, but eventually we got over it and we moved on. She moved away. She's a wog too, so. She moved away, went to Grand Forks. And then I was single for about 6 months, living alone by myself. So, you know, I had a lot of time to think. I had a lot of time to be who I was, be who I wanted to be. And then I lost my job, which, you know, I don't want to blame myself, but there's nobody else to blame. The way I see it anyway is this, I couldn't blame anyone else but myself, but I don't know, Sean said, I told this story to Sean, and he says, yeah, don't blame yourself. It's not your fault. As far as I'm concerned, they fucked up. You know, they called me half an hour before my 12-hour shift was supposed to start. I'd already been up all day. And they said, oh yeah, show up. So I tried to stay up all night in a huge, huge manufacturing plant all by myself. I was tired as fuck. After the first 4 hours, I was just Gandhi. Hadn't fallen asleep, but I was so wrapped up. It was like I was high. I couldn't think straight. I couldn't see straight. I couldn't do anything. About 6 hours in, I got my second wind, which lasted for about 4 or 5 hours. It was going good. But guess what happened? 5 minutes before the end of my shift and 5 minutes before the owner of this plant showed up, I fell asleep. I got fired that day. So, yeah, I know it's security, you know, you gotta do this because they're relying on me. They gotta trust me. But I got this new job now and I'm standing for 8.5 hours a day. I'm loving it. I got a new girlfriend and she's fucking hot, man. Ooh. But you know, it's the whole, life story issue, you know? I guess that's really all I can say. Anyways, this is all I can say. I really have nothing else to say. So, I might as well just, quit it right here, because we gotta leave, and I'm locked up in my bedroom right now. My Ryze in the living room. He's not hearing a word I'm saying. But, we gotta leave in probably about 10-15 minutes. I would've made more recordings, I would've talked more. There's a lot more I have to say, I'll tell you that. I can never really find the venue to say it. Like, I want to do a show. I really do. I want to do a radio show on Rant Radio Talk. Thing is, you know, is what I have to say going to be enough for people to say, hey, cool? I just need to talk to people. I just need to get my voice heard. That's all I've ever wanted. I don't want to be the blip. You know, I was the blip my whole life. I don't want to be the blip anymore. I don't want to be the gray man anymore. The question is, when you die, do you want to be remembered or do you want to be forgotten? I've spent too much of my life being forgotten. I want to be remembered when I die. But anyways, this is Prosium, Kyle. You can call me whatever. With the wild cut and everything, and I guess this is me signing off. Peace.